Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Behind the Business Book. I have with me in the business book industry, although he won't admit it, the man is a legend. We've got Jack Covert on the other side of the phone. Between him and Tom Peters, I think if it hadn't have been for both of them, I think that the business book industry would look very different than it does today. So 25 or 30 years ago, Jack, I'll let him tell his part of the story. But long story short, he founded 800 CEO Reed. He became an advocate, a champion of business books, especially finding the gems that were out there and bringing them to other people's attention, helping people find the value that there was in business books. And then the company, 800 CEO Reed, has done a tremendous job in being a leader in this space and bringing great standards, I guess, to the industry. Jack is now retired, or at least semi-retired, and so he's going to tell us that he is no longer in the middle of things, but I think that he's probably got a lot more insight. He is probably, I'm sure, forgotten more than most people in the business book industry will ever know. And he also co-authored with Todd Satterston the 100 best business books of all times. And if I can add on a personal note, he is one of my professional heroes. Jack, thank you so much for coming on today.
Wow. Okay. Yes. That you're welcome. You're welcome. That's a nice intro, but you should have added Lee Iacocca, because it was Peters and Iacocca that showed mainstream publishers that these weird little business books could sell.
Really? I didn't know. I mean, I've got Iacocca right here on the shelf. It's one of my favorite business memoirs. But so him
Oh, it
and
took off.
Tom Peters.
It was a crazy bestseller over Christmas of that year, whichever it was, 83, maybe 83, 84. And In Search of Excellence in paperback started getting traction too. And Peters was out doing a shtick, and he was, I mean, there were the that raised the eyebrows on a lot of mainstream New York publishers that are all literature folks, that these business books could sell some serious numbers if they were done right.
I had never done the timeline. I didn't realize that Iacocca came out the same time that In Search of Excellence did.
Very close. I think Iacocca came out the year that In Search of Excellence had been in paperback. When it came out in paperback, it came out in spring of whatever year that was, and it was, I think Iacocca came out in October or November of that year, and they both were nuts.
So in just that, let's see, so what is that, just 32, 33 years? I mean, it's gone from business books being kind of on the margins, as you're saying, to now being, I mean, it's millions and millions
Industry.
of copies sold. Yeah, it's a huge part of the publishing. So what's the, can you trace that history for us? What was the impetus? Was it just the success of those books, or was it the success of those books and the market realizing that there was some real value to be had in there? Was it people looking for more advice from business books? What was the
I
catalyst?
think the '80s had a lot to do with it. I mean, the '70s were a pretty grim decade, and Reagan came in, and all the business people, thought it was the light has been shown. And Chrysler, to the turnaround of Chrysler was a huge deal. And Peters and Waterman wrote a really readable, interesting book. And Tom is a very compelling speaker and was out doing his thing. I think that had a lot to do with it. It was the time. It was a unique time in American economic business history. And those two books came at just the right time. And I'm sure there were other ones, but those are the two that I remember.
Yeah, that reminds me of that quote. I can't think of who it was, but it said that there's nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come.
And told well. I mean, that's one of the things your listeners should know, that both of these books that we're talking about, and pretty much every business book that sells serious numbers, is really well told. Just dry academic treatises just don't sell. But if you put a storyteller on it, like Gladwell or Michael Lewis or somebody like that, they're storytellers. And that's what makes things fly. And the problem is most business book authors aren't real good writers. They're idea people.
Yeah. And I think too that that so many of them take their cues or their writing examples from what they had to do in college and what they read in
Yep.
coming through the ranks. And so that storytelling, if they had any of those leanings, that they were kind of trained out of that, right? Because whenever you're writing a paper for college or for your master's degree or your MBA, you're not supposed to be a storyteller. You're supposed to wring
Exactly.
emotion out of it.
That's why Gladwell and Lewis are so unique, because they are novelists almost. They're storytellers in a true sense of the word, and they take arcane thoughts and sometimes not so arcane thoughts and write really compelling articles on them. And Atul Gawande, I think, is how you pronounce his name, the New Yorker writer, the doctor, physician. Who I think his latest book is on how the medical profession is not prepared for death, doesn't prepare the patient for death. His stuff is just compelling as heck, and it's bestsellers. I mean, I think his last book is still on the list. If it's not, it just fell off, and it's been on for a year or so.
I completely missed that book. Do you remember the title offhand?
I think if you go to NewYorker.com and look up ATUL, you will find he's a New Yorker writer, and you will find his credentials there, and then just do a search and you'll find it, his
Is
latest book.
that the guy who wrote the that great book on lists?
On what?
On lists.
No.
He wrote a book on just
Oh,
on
yes. Yes,
lists.
he did. Yes, he did. You're right. That's who he is.
Yeah, here it is.
Yes.
It's Gawande, yeah. Let's see, Complications, Better, The Checklist Manifesto, that's the one I'm thinking of. His
Yeah.
latest medicine, Being Mortal, Medicine and What
Yeah.
Matters in the End. I had missed that book. I'll go put it on my list.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's quite remarkable.
So Tom, excuse me, I'm still thinking of Tom Peters. So going back to whenever Tom Peters and Leah Iacocca came out with their books, Jack, do you mind giving a little bit of your background with Harry Schwartz and the three bookshelves that was in the back of the store and turning that into 800 CEO Read, that kind of journey?
All right, so my wife got a job at Schwartz. I got to meet David. David at that time was a 50-something. He calls himself a red diaper baby. His father had the bookstore Harry W. of Harry W. Schwartz Bookshops, and he was always a very progressive man, and we hit it off. And he saw something in me, because his father, when he bought the business from his father in the early 70s, his father said, "You need to sell business technical and computer books." Now, David looked like an old hippie, and I had relatively short hair and gray hair, and kind of was fearless. And he saw in me that possibility, and we worked on it for probably 3 years, until we started to get traction. And it was basic one-on-one selling. It's the Guerrilla Marketing book by J. Conrad Levinson, hanging flyers on windshield wipers, that sort of thing. And I was selling and preaching business books to the locals. And at that time, there were corporate librarians. I mean, all the major corporations had a huge information section that the engineers would go to for data. and history is sort of Wikipedia in the 80s. So I got to know these people, and they're generally women, and I got to know the women in the local area, Johnson Controls and the Northwestern Mutual people, and I built a little bit of a business there. Then I decided I wanted to get bigger, and so we started a catalog in the late 80s, early 90s, and it was the Business Book Gazette, and that turned into be a really nice little item, two or three a year, four color, 250,000 print, and that growth gave us really nice growth. And then Amazon came along and totally took that away. And we floundered around in the late 90s and started looking at who our real customer was. And at that time, we started getting relationships with authors because authors were having trouble getting their product, their books. I mean, they spent a lot of money to have someone write the book, or they spent a lot of time writing the book. And they've got this little window that they know they have, and they need to make a pop during that time. And publishers many times would drop the ball in getting product because publishers are not made to send out 100 copies; they're made to send out 5 skids. So we developed a service organization that was able to supply authors with their books. And in the meantime, we kept the marketing arm going, which was the whole business book thing, which is continues to grow. I mean, we do in the books, and we do change this, and we do all these information-driven blogs that 800 CEO Read does. And we're really a service organization now. We live in a huge warehouse with 3 loading docks and pallet jacks and so, I mean, that is a 3-minute version of a 32-year life, and there's a lot of holes in that. But those are the inflection points that I can remember at this advanced age. But it was you bump into Amazon coming and taking your entire catalog business and going, oh, what are we going to do now? And you look at what you got, and you make some decisions and go from there. Does that make sense?
No, that's like you say, 30 years in just a couple of minutes. So in that 30-year arc, what are some of the huge changes that you've seen from the, I guess from a market standpoint, so what people used to want to see in business books and what the opportunities were. But also from an industry perspective, how the industry has changed to go from, just a couple of bestsellers to now. I mean, it's the market's almost glutted. I think that there's anywhere between 4,000 and 10,000 business titles released in an average year.
Yeah, Todd in wrote the Flyleaf. No, he didn't. It wasn't a Flyleaf. It was in the foreword of the 100 Best. I think his number using BISAC, and this was 7 years ago, Book Industry something something something, which is BISAC, that is 10,000 titles published. And this was a while ago. Now, your audience is not booksellers. Your audiences are authors, correct? And people who are thinking of becoming an author. And what I can tell you that what I think I bring value to them with is how can they make their product known? I mean, where what's the best bang for the buck that they can get? And that is the thing that is constantly changing. Back in the 80s, it was shelf space. It was phased out. It was Barnes and Noble, 800 CE, front of the store stuff, windows. I mean, basic, that old school marketing that's been around since the probably 30s. And then technology came along, and Amazon came along, and BarnesandNoble.com and Walmart.com and all these other places started coming on. And it's buggy whips versus Formula One cars. I mean, it's that different.
Yeah, it's a good analogy.
Yeah, I mean, your authors have got a real tough row to hold because it's so totally changed. Back when I started, if a self-published book was crap because it had gone through the editing process and no New York publisher, and they were almost all in New York, would touch it. So then they self-publish it. And then you just, as the arbitrator of taste, which you are when you're in a bookstore, you just know it's garbage. And it was pretty much consistently true that way. But now there's just huge markets with Amazon and all the other offshoots that these people, authors, can use to promote and sell their books. But it's the same issue that the self-published author had and the author who's a Kindle author on Amazon. It's the same issue. Who's going to buy the book? How many books are you going to sell? Is the value of your time going to make you enough money that you're not wasting your time? Because only people have friends and family that are going to buy the book. How are you going to promote the book? Are you a speaker? Are you a consultant? Are you a whatever? How many of those people are going to buy the book? That's what you want to do. And it's pretty darn simple. It's the same thing in the 80s as it is in the 20s. It's who's going to buy the book?
So I think the opportunity, or at least the a different challenge, is that because there are so many more freelancers, there's Create Space and there's Ingram Spark and all of these other additional services, sure, that any author, nobody can go ahead.
No, go on. I'm agreeing with you.
No, nobody can tell an author no. Right. So in the 20, 30 years ago, it was like you say, either, you know, if a traditional publisher didn't pick you up, then you had to go the self-publishing route. And it looked like
it was garbage
book, which, yeah, it was awful. Today.
And there was a huge out of pocket for the author, too.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's significantly less. Across the board. I mean, the options are significantly more, but the cost is significantly less.
So do you think that presents an opportunity for authors? Do you think that it makes it even more challenging, or do you think that it's just the same challenge, just with a different face?
That's a very good question, because you can argue both sides. It makes it much easier because there's very little barriers to get into it. But does that mean it's better? I doubt that. It's the quality of the point, the stories that are told, and then the big problem an author nowadays has is, how do you get any kind of connection? I mean, 800 CEO Read, we get pallets of books, single copies, double copies, from people who want us to promote or mention their book on our website. And we're just this podunk little place in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Think about the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. It's marketing. How are you going to raise above the masses the author? It runs into the same problem that they had back in the day. I mean, the Reengineering the Corporation was Hammer and Champy wrote that book. Michael Hammer, Business Week, I think it was Business Week, maybe it was Time Magazine, had a cover on the new consultants, and Senge was there, and people had books, but Michael Hammer's book didn't come out until like 6 weeks later. And They had done a marketing campaign of sending the copy free to the Fortune 500 CEOs. In those days, there was not a filter to keep those books from coming to the CEO because it was such a unique idea. The book took off. Now, it's a combination of the fact that the book had a compelling argument. He was on the cover of Time Magazine. He used this marketing idea to get traction that way. And because of that, he got ink all over the place, and the book became a national bestseller. And does if if he didn't try the Fortune 500 and did all the other ones, would it have been successful? If the book had not a compelling message and done all the other, would it have been successful? I think the message had a lot to do with it. And then the guy getting called out before the book came out didn't hurt either. So, I mean, things work and things don't. That would not work now, because part of that 800 CEO Read service organization that we do, the logistics that we do, we've done that many times when an author is paid to have us do that. And it doesn't work. They've got filters. There's now two or three levels from the mailroom to the CEO that would call us out, and it would end up in the corporate library on somebody's desk, which isn't going to buy the book anyway. The only way that works is if you've got content within the organization, connections within the organization, and you personalize a book to Joe Smith or Jane Smith, and he or she gets the book because they know who you are.
It reminds me of the purpose driven life by Pastor Rick Warren. He did something similar to that, but he sent a copy of The Purpose Driven Life out to I forgot how many thousand pastors for free, and then all of those pastors got up in their pulpits or in their circles of influence and touted, you know, how great the book was. And then that's really how it took off and became, God, I don't know how many millions of copies he sold. But
that would not work now, because it's been done.
Yeah.
And
so each of those,
you have to come up with a new one.
Yeah, each of those silver bullets, once it's been fired, or at least once a couple of people hear about the strategy and they start copying it, that kills it. So I've got plenty of authors who ask about marketing, and that's not my expertise. I'm a ghostwriter, but I wish that I had foolproof plan to give them, but there's none. Some of it's luck, some of it's ad hoc, some of it is time and determination and pouring in that energy and treating it like a product that has to be sold. It's not something that's you're going to write it and put it on your website or put it on Amazon.com and it's become a bestseller. It takes time and energy and effort, just like it would if you had created, if you had invented something, if you had written a piece of music, if you had created some art. It's a product that you have to market and sell like any other entrepreneur.
That's exactly right. And it that is no different than it was in 82 than it is in 2016. It's exactly the same. The transportation, the ability to get the product into the customer hands has changed. You don't have to buy a hardcover book. You don't have to chop trees down. You can send it in a multitudinous ways to your customer, but the customer is going to want to want it. And that's your job.
So, speaking of great books, let's take a sideways step, Jack, and let me ask you about the 100 best business books of all time. So why did you and Todd decide to take the effort to write the book? How many books did y'all read and research and index before settling on those 100? And that's all the work that you did before you even wrote the book. Why do all of that work?
Todd wanted to write a book, and I've sort of got the name in the industry, and he didn't. And so I said, okay, write a proposal, and let's see. And I'll send it to the people I know, and let's see how it goes. Well, he wrote this proposal that made no sense to me, and I said it made no sense. And we sent it to he sent it to somebody that I know. And that person said, this makes no sense. So it was probably a year later, Todd gave that proposal to Will Weiser, who is Adrian Zackheim's number one person at Portfolio, the division of Penguin. And Will got back to Todd and said, this is really convoluted. Why don't you just write a book called The 100 Best Business Books? And Todd and I are two totally different kinds of people. So I said, before we do that, let's find out how much we agree. So we both went into our separate offices and made a list. And I had like 120, Todd had like 130. And 88 of them were the same. So we knew that we had a possibility to do that. And then we spent 52 weeks reading and reviewing 50 books. And in the meantime, we had this whole crew of people doing all the filler things that were in there, the sidebars and the choose-your-own-adventure aspect of it. We're in our offices reading 400 pages and writing, you know, God knows how many words on them. And then Sally, who's a woman who, by the way, appropriate timing, the 100 best business books of all time is coming out in a third edition, third revised edition in August. And I think Todd and Sally, hang on, I'm looking it up, took five books out and put five new books in. So that's coming out. It'll be in paperback. And it's coming out in August. Jack.
I can't wait to get it out.
It'll. I mean, we've kind of kept it not under wraps, but it just Sally and Todd put it together because I said, I'm done with that. You know, when I die, I'm going to be an author of the 100 best business books. Doing a second book would be a waste of my time. And so they did it, which is great. More power to them. But it's coming out in late July, early August. So then we sat down and did it. And it was an appropriate time in the life of the company in that we had the freedom to do this. We had the staff to do the grunt work that needs to be done on a book like that. I mean, your listeners should go to the library at least and look at that book because it is really a beautifully packaged book. Because we know what a good book looks like. We created a good book. We gave it to the publishers like that. And it turned out really, really well. And it sold really well to the point where Adrian cornered me at a party 18 months ago and said, you need to do something with this. And I gave him that whole line, I'm done, I'm retired. When I die, I'll be an author, not a two-time author. It doesn't matter. You know. And so he went to Todd, and Todd bought into it, which is fine. So that's what we got. That book is coming.
Well, it is a beautiful book, and it's I would say this, and in fact I've said this all over the internet and elsewhere. In fact, I even quoted you and Todd in my book, The Business Book Bible. I quoted y'all in there, and it's a great book. I've got a hardcover of the first edition that came out in 2009, was it?
Yeah, it was perfect timing. We were at we had a party in New York to launch a book. It was published, I think, in January or February of that year. And we went to Business Week to Hardy Green, who was a business book guy at Business Week at that time. He no longer is. And we're standing there in the lobby, and the scroll on the bottom of the television is talking about the number of people that were laid off at Caterpillar, and because it was the beginning of the 08-09 crash.
The
world turned around on that day, not that day, but that year. Yeah. And I think, oh, there's a great time to bring out a book about business, but we did. And it worked.
Well, you know, I mean, no matter, I was talking to, a prospective client or somebody, maybe a year ago, And they were saying that they wanted to write a book. They knew, all the business benefits that could come with writing a especially a thought leadership book. But they said, all the ideas have been taken. Everything that's been said that needs to be said has been said. There's nothing new that I can bring to the table. And on the one hand, I'm sure that's true. There's only so many times that you can say, you need to be innovative. You need to treat your people right. You need to be a good person. You need to stay on top of your financials. You need to do all the different ways that you can say, here's how to have success in business. But at the same time, I argue that it's the same thing in any other kind of literary genre. I mean, the detective story, there's only so many ways that you can tell who done it. But I mean, still, we churn out thousands of new titles a year. Same thing in science fiction and fantasy. Same thing in romance novels or thrillers. But yet, every author finds some new way to spin it or some new way to present it or to translate something that was said 30 years ago and make it relevant to today.
Yeah, it's again, it's the story. I
So
mean, you
whereas
tell. You...
that, go ahead.
Whereas.
So whereas that, this author was saying that that it's all been done. I think that's been true for probably a few hundred years, if not a few millennia, and yet we still find new ways to present it, new ways to spin it, and more importantly, there's no one that has had the unique combination of experiences that this particular author has had. He's grown up in a different decade. He's grown up in a different generation. He's gone through a different series of events than somebody else, and there's value in that. So I encourage every potential author I come across. I guess the way I say it is that every book should be written. It's just not every book that should be published.
And we, I mean, how many notes are there in on a piano? Yet we continue, I mean, there's a finite number of notes on a piano, yet we continue to make beautiful music with those finite notes. There's so many ideas in the world, but presenting them harmonically might present a different way of looking at something.
Yeah, that's a nice analogy. I haven't quite applied that one to business books. I've read there's only 26 letters in the alphabet, but that seems, I don't know, kind of. Yeah, but you're right. You're right. There's only so many notes, and yet we continue to write new songs every day.
I agree.
Well, Jack, let me ask you the three standard questions that I like to ask everybody. So what's and for you, I know this is going to be quite difficult, but what's one of your favorite business books of all time? Besides the
Depends
100
on
best business
depends
books
on
of all
it.
time.
De it depends on what I'm looking for. I mean, John Updike Rabbit series is some of the greatest literature about a business person. Watching Rabbit Angstrom grow, and he's, but there's all sorts of other things going on in the stories. If I having issues with, I mean, I think Marshall Goldsmith is one of the great writers.
Oh,
I think
that's
that, yeah, and Peters is one of the great presenters. So picking the best business book of all time, I will pick Chasing Daylight by the guy, the CEO of Booz Allen, who discovered he had brain cancer, and it's a story of his last 6 months of his life. He died at like 43, And it's just an incredibly heartwarming, touching story about death and how a person deals with death. Now, the guy was a CEO, so I classify it as a business book, but not very many people would. But that was a very moving book, and it came to me at just that point in my life. It depends on your point in your life. It depends on what you're looking for. So there is no answer to that. How's that for a cop out?
Well, first of all, I've never come across Chasing Daylight, so I will also put that on the list. And you
It's
bring
in the
up
100 best.
another. Well, it's been a few years since I've read The 100 Best, so apparently I'm going to have to go back and read that again.
Yeah, that was one of the 12. That was one of the 12 that both of us didn't agree on. Yeah, that we had to negotiate.
All right, I'll trade you Chasing Daylight for Finding
That's how it
Happiness.
worked. That's how it works. That's how it worked. I mean, a fly on the wall in those conversations would have been quite something.
Yeah. You bring up a neat point, one that I'm not sure that we've got time to explore, but it's the question of what is a business book? Because if you go into Barnes and Nobles, the business book section is in one place, but then you've got self-help and personal development on the other side of the store, and yet there are plenty of books in one that could easily fit into the other, and then there are plenty of books that are on economic development or economic history or business history that I would easily say is a business book, but like you say, other people would classify it as not. So even just saying business books, it's not really cut and dry as to what is and what isn't.
But back in the days when I cared about something like that, which was 30 years ago, 25 years ago, I classified if I could sell it, it was a business book. Now that I'm serious, Iacocca was a biography. Okay, Iacocca was not a business book, but
That's
I
true.
was able to
That's
sell
true.
it. I was able to sell it, so I claimed it. Now, obviously, romance, well, no, fiction. I mean, Zap and The Goal, they're fiction,
Yeah.
but yeah, but they're business fiction.
Right.
So it's nowadays it's what you're looking for as a consumer drives what is a business book, I think, which is a real stretch, but
No, I think it's true. I think that we are in a consumer-driven market. Some people might
I'm
argue that
Mr.
it's always
Consumer.
been.
Yeah.
You were in consumer marketing before it was a thing, huh?
I'm a merchant, man. That's what I do, is I sell shit. Okay? That's what all my employees know. I mean, the kids that I've been able to that have been with me for forever, that are, the core of 800 CEO Read, we sell stuff. That's what we do. We just happen to focus on business books because business books are something that we know. And business book authors are generally people that buy books by the box. And I like to
Yeah.
sell books by the box, not sell books one at a time. So that's, I
To
mean, it
sell
was,
one box at a time, then one book at a time.
yeah, I mean, that was one of the stories I tell is that in the early days, I'm sitting back there because I came into this thing from a record store. I owned a record store for 12 years. And so
Really?
I didn't know anything about, yeah, I didn't know anything about books, but they're the same thing because books are a product that you have to sell that was created that you had no control over the creation. The same way with music. I mean, if Bruce Springsteen does a book, does an album of Gregorian chants, it's going to be a slightly different than Born in the USA. And if Tom Peters writes a poetry book, you know what I'm saying? You have no control over what you're selling.
Right.
Well, I was standing there looking at a customer who spent probably 2 hours and bought a copy of the 100 best places. No, it was what color is your parachute? And then that lunch, I saw a guy in a suit and tie come in and grab five copies of In Search of Excellence and paper and walk to the front counter. And I went, aha, that's my customer, because that's the way you want to sell things. And that's kind of where we've gone. I mean, I've been following that customer. That all makes sense.
Yeah, it's I never knew that you did records and just came straight into but you know
Music
that
is
that actually may be, yeah.
my passion. I sell books.
You sell books to buy the music.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've got a 128 gig iPhone that is getting pretty full. So yeah, I mean, but it's the reason why 800 CEO Read is growing like it's growing. The reason why 800 CEO Read is successful is because we've got people that care. We're a customer service business that has people that care and know how to get around. You can't do that. I mean, we got books into the Javits Center on Martin Luther King's birthday. Yeah, and no union was working then, and the Javits Center is a totally union shop. We were able to get books into that place on Martin Luther King's birthday. That's the kind of stuff we do. That's what makes 800 CEO Read special, and that's why authors come back to us when in 3 or 4 years when they bring out their third or fourth or fifth book. It's not about my brilliance or anybody else's brilliance. It's about we're a service organization, which is sad for your authors because there's not going to be a lot of insight that I can give them that'll make their life easier. But that's what 800 CEO Read is. And that's what we became.
And I think that you probably have had some of that success because, like you constantly say, I've read it, I don't know how many times, that you call yourself a merchant, having that focus and not coming from, maybe a publishing background or a literary background, but coming from a retailing background, where it's if you don't make a sale, you don't pay the bills.
Yeah, I mean it's the metaphor I use is I've got this push cart and I've got to have more money in my pocket at the end of the day than I had when I started. If I do that, life is good. And we've been able to be very, very successful doing that simple stuff. It's a very simple thing.
Yeah, well, y'all are apparently doing a simple thing rather well because
We've been
800
very
CEO
lucky.
is. So, luck. What was it? Was it Pasteur said that luck favors the prepared mind?
Yeah, and it's not, it's the people. It's the people. It's Meg and Roy and Dylan and Sally and the people of, I've got kids who started as kids, now own homes and are married and have kids. I mean, it's a real cool thing. And those guys are really, really smart. They're way smarter than I am. But I think my skill, if there is any, was hiring the right people and keeping the right people.
Well, Jack, I just looked at the clock and realized that I've taken more of your time than I originally asked for. But thank you so much for being so forthcoming, for being so straightforward about the not just the business, but your experience in it, what you've learned, what you feel like that you've taken away from it. And what you feel like you still have to learn, but it just having the experience of being able to have you walk us down memory lane, if nothing else, has been. Well, I know it's been worth my time. I really appreciate
Well,
yours.
that's very nice of you. it's been fun going back, you know. So yeah, I hope it's you're selling stuff, Mr. or Ms. Author. You're selling stuff. Who's going to buy what you're selling, and how are you going to sell it? That's the crux of the nutshell. I mean, that's it. That's it all together. It's very, very simple. If you can write garbage and have people buy it, you're a success. If you can write War and Peace and nobody buys it, you're a failure. It's the selling the product that's important. It ain't literature, folks.
Right. Right. Although, like you say, having a great story and being a great writer, that's an important part of it. So I guess you have to sell a product, but it has to be a product worth buying.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's hard to do that. I mean, if it was easy to do that, there'd be an awful lot of
everybody
those
would do
folks
it.
Out there.
Yeah. Oh, so Jack, thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Good luck, everybody.